States versus Castellano Martinez, number 08-40764. Hear from Ms. Odom.
May it please the court, Molly Odom for Mr. Castellano Martinez. Mr. Castellano Martinez pleaded guilty to reentry after deportation. The government did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and Mr. Castellano Martinez did not admit a specific date of deportation or sequence of deportation with regard to an aggravated felony. Rojas Luna stands for the proposition that the deportation date or timing of the deportation as it relates to an enhancing conviction is an Apprendi fact. Under Apprendi, therefore, Mr. Castellano Martinez's sentence could not be enhanced based on a deportation date or in relation to an enhancing conviction.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, your gentleman pled guilty to, illegal reentry, which
That's
means
correct.
That he admitted that he reentered after having been deported.
That's correct.
And the crime on which the government seeks to predicate the aggravated felony predates all of the deportations.
In order to make that determination that enhancing conviction predates all of them, you would have to look at the PSR. You can't make that determination based on the facts that were presented at the rearrangement. At the rearrangement, he admitted that he had been deported.
You know, they could have just put this in an indictment, and if people want to plea and then they want to dance after the plea, they put it in the indictment and require them to plead to it. If they want to plead to the plea to it, then that might solve some of the problem.
That's true. Now, in this case, the indictment had...
Because it's really quite odd that, in a way, we all know how we got there, but... The notion that this is something that he's entitled to have proved at trial, which he is waiving and giving up, but has nonetheless the right to insist that that it be proved with a plea of guilty.
I'm not sure that he waived it or the defendant waived it or gave it up.
The Apprendi fact here is the timing of the correct.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. And that's the uncertainty that's left in the. Out of the plea proceedings.
That's correct, okay.
That's right. And so, anyway, but and certainly it remains that even though he has admitted the elements of the offense, it still nonetheless has to prove this other because another Apprendi fact that would have occurred at trial. Anyway,
if you call it an Apprendi fact, does this mean that your client was entitled to have a jury trial at sentencing?
No.
How does that work?
Because he cannot be enhanced based on a judicial finding at sentencing. Apprendi and post-Apprendi cases, the Supreme Court and this court, has been quite clear that the facts are proved beyond a reasonable doubt or admitted at the rearrangement. And in order to find the Apprendi facts in this case, you have to go to the PSR. Now, this court...
Now, suppose there were records of the prior deportations or a conviction that said... since he had been deported three times, it is possible that he had been actually arraigned on a previous deportation charge. We don't know for sure. Suppose the court had introduced Shepard-compliant documents.
At rearrangement, that would be sufficient.
No, why not at sentencing? Because I think you're establishing way too broad a proposition when you say no fact in the PSR can be relied upon, because if you have Shepard documents...
I'm not saying that no fact in the PSR can be relied upon.
None was in this case.
What I'm saying is that in this case, in order to establish the timing or the deportation date, you have to look to the PSR. And in this case, there was an objection, and we did not admit to the facts in the PSR. Now, granted, this court has, on plain error review, look to the PSR. They did this in Ramirez. They did it, in other cases. They have looked at the PSR, but that is to find the fourth prong, whether or not it affected the fairness and integrity.
Well, how does it affect the fairness or integrity? Oh, you're on direct review.
That's correct. There was an objection. Keeping in mind, this rearrangement was pre-Rojas Luna, After 2 weeks afterwards, after this rearrangement, then Rojas Luna came down, and prior to sentencing, there was an objection that there had not been an Apprendi fact-finding. And this case is really an outlier. When you look at it, when you look at the rearrangement that occurred, you have the government, the court asking the government, it's a group plea, and the court asking the government, do I need to warn him about an enhancing conviction? And the AUSA says, no, he has a theft, but it's a misdemeanor. And it proceeds from there, and then you have a group pleading with a group of...
Let me ask you a question. To what extent does your argument rest on the characterization of the the timing of the deportation as Apprendi, as falling within the reach of Apprendi? That is, it would have to be proved at trial.
If you're asking, does it have to be proved the timing, it can be the date of deportation or the timing.
No,
I'm sorry. I'm
asking to what extent your argument here rests upon the characterization of the timing as being an Apprendi, falling the Apprendi within the grasp of Apprendi as distinguished from a prior conviction, which would go off on Almendarez Torres.
And on that, I'm relying on Rojas Luna. Am I not answering your question? In Rojas Luna, they specifically said that either the deportation date or the sequence was an Apprendi fact.
Well, what if it wasn't an Apprendi fact? What difference would it make here?
What difference would it make here?
If it were not an Apprendi fact, yes.
If it were not an Apprendi fact, then we're talking about exceeding the statutory maximum, because what he admitted to was a 2-year conviction. And so with Rojas Luna identifying as Apprendi facts,
I'm being too obscure in my question. What I'm getting to is the thing that drives us. What happens here is that the Supreme Court has said that a defendant has a right to a jury trial, and that jury trial includes these facts that will enhance the sentence as they've described. But then what happens is that the person wants to plead guilty, which waives and gives up his right a jury trial.
I see.
Yet, nonetheless, what's happening here with this line of cases is that this notion of what he would be entitled to the level of proof had he gone to trial.
I see what you're saying.
Nonetheless, obtains.
I see what you're saying. It's twofold. It's
so
not.
But you give him I want to plead guilty, Judge. But no, I stand on mute on that point.
I see what you're saying. It's not a waiver. What we're looking at is whether or not it was proved beyond a reasonable doubt or admitted by the defendant.
Well, suppose we go back. I mean, that's why I was asking you what happens on remand, because suppose they introduce some affidavit from some Border Patrol guy. I put him on the bus, and I waved goodbye as he went over the bridge into where Piedras Negras or whatever. And he says, I don't agree to that. Then what happens? Do we have a trial on sentencing?
No. The case is that, because with Rojas Luna identifying as an Apprendi fact, this is very similar to the cases that this court faced in drug cases post-Apprendi, where pre-Apprendi there were drug cases without the drug amount in the indictment, and defendants could have certainly pled to it. But what this court found was post-Apprendi, because it was identified as an Apprendi fact, that they had to reverse and remand, that because the sentence exceeded the statutory maximum, it was Apprendi-required reversal.
I do not remember that on questions of sentencing. I remember that only on questions of the original guilty plea.
And that's what we're looking at here.
So you're vacating the guilty plea.
That's correct. We're vacating.
I thought it was vacate and remand for resentencing in Rojas Luna.
It is in this case. You cannot exceed the statutory maximum, so it is vacated and remanded so as not to exceed the statutory maximum.
I mean, what you're saying is he pled guilty to a 2-year crime, and he was sentenced under a 20-year crime.
That's
and
correct.
Had he been sentenced to anywhere from 0 to 24 months based on the PSR and information
that's
from
correct.
Hearsay and all this kind of stuff that's typical of sentencing, that'd be fine with you.
Well, right.
Your complaint is that he now has a different statutory maximum than what he pled to,
that's
and
correct.
That's the piece you're saying is
yes.
The Apprendi fact.
That's correct.
Well, thank you for that. But at the same time, Why can't they go back and simply re-indict him? And then he's going to be exposed to 20 years. Is that what you really want for your client, and why shouldn't they be allowed to do that?
Well, double jeopardy attaches when he accepted the plea. And he pled guilty to a 1326A case. This would be like in a firearms case where the government proved and he pled to, or he proved a trial and he admitted to, he had convictions for two but not three violent felonies. The Sixth Amendment would not permit the government to obtain an enhanced penalty under 924E, proving at sentencing that the defendant had a subsequent conviction for a third felony.
But in terms of, if I'm taking the plea and I tell the man that these are the elements to which this is what you're pleading to, and part of the crime you're pleading to here is that under Apprendi includes this additional element, and then my question is how he can stand there and say I'm going to plead to that. But I'm not. I'm going to plead, but I won't say. I'm not admitting what is really the crime with his charge. But see, the heart of Apprendi is it's part of the crime.
A prior deportation.
Right. And the Ninth Circuit has looked at a case like that where he was indicted, and the conviction date, the deportation date, was in the indictment, and then at rearrangement, the defendant refused to admit it, and the Ninth Circuit said you can't do that. What I'm saying in this case,
the Ninth Circuit gets some things right.
Right. But they do sometimes. They said you can't do that. They said, but they admitted there was an Apprendi error. But they said that it was, you know, they said no, you can't go there and deny it. I mean, then you're going to if he's not going to admit it, then there's going to be a bench trial with the evidence admitted. In this case, there was not a date of deportation in the indictment. The government says he's got a misdemeanor. We proceed, and with the group, there's a group, they say they were deported, and they returned illegally.
This goes back, what this leads to is simply the district judge's, in the district judge's colloquy in taking the plea, he or she includes these quote Apprendi factors as well, and if you want to plead, this is what you plead to.
She does. She
you don't allow them to sharpshoot you like this.
She admonishes them. She does. She admonishes them. She gives them notice that their statutory maximum is 20 years. However, again, it's a group plea, and that's the most common denominator. What it would have been a mistake for her to say the maximum you're facing is 2 years.
Well, that's not what's
or 10 years.
No, I think he's being a little more precise than that. Mm-hmm. I think he's not talking about the range. What he's talking about is the specific colloquy, where when the judge accepts the guilty plea, the judge says, and part of the factual basis is you were deported on such and such a date.
That's true. And in this one, they did not have a date. There was no date. In order to find a date in this case, we have to go to the PSR.
You know, I know that, but there is a level at which this verges on absurdity.
And this case is an outlier. This really is. As the district court said, I'm assuming we are correcting this problem right now.
No,
and
I
they
don't.
Did.
You're saying it's an outlier because you were smart enough to have, preserved your error and so on. What I'm saying is an outlier is the idea that the fact that this fellow committed his first crime in March of 2004, the first one he's convicted for, and then he has three subsequent crimes, and then three deportations at each step of the way here, that, we have to blind our eyes to things that are just part of the crime that he committed, which is subsequent deportations.
Right. And the government didn't have its ducks in a row at this rearrangement.
But he pled that he was deported after having convicted a crime, right?
No, he did not. He pled that he was deported after he was deported, he reentered. There was no statement that he said that he was deported and he reentered the United States illegally. It did not say after a conviction.
Why did he, on careful instruction of his lawyer, just stand mute just to that precise point?
Because he wasn't standing mute to it. The government had said prior to it.
I don't know what happened. What I read that happened was that he refused. He, the pleading defendant, refused to make a statement about this missing fact. Is that not?
He had said that he had cautioned his defendant. Now, had at the actual factual basis which proved it, had the government provided a date, then the issue, then you go on to whether or not that qualifies as an aggravated felony. But they did not provide a date or a sequence.
Well, suppose the government had, in fact, it could be a 1326A, but had the government, in fact, said, and he was deported after he had been convicted of such and such a crime. It doesn't have to be an exact date.
If he admitted to the sequence, he would have admitted to it. That's correct, because he would have admitted to the timing.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Gowie?
May it please the Court, good afternoon. I'm Renata Gowie for the United States. There is no reversible Rojas Luna error in this case. At rearrangement, Castellano Martinez admitted that he had been deported, and all of his deportations were after his aggravated felony conviction. This is different
from... But he didn't admit that piece, did he? He said, I've been deported, and I've had felony convictions, but he didn't admit the sequence, did he? It could be that he was deported and then he had felony convictions, or he had the felony convictions and then he was deported, right?
He did not admit the date of his deportation, and he did not admit the sequence.
And doesn't he have to?
No.
I mean, you don't really take issue with her point that it is an Apprendi fact here, do you?
I don't take issue that it's an Apprendi fact, but this is much different from Rojas Luna. In Rojas Luna, the defendant admitted to a deportation that was before his aggravated felony.
Let me ask you a question. What difference does it make? He admitted to, most of the other things he admitted to were Apprendi fact. Every element of that offense was an Apprendi fact, right? And he admitted it. I mean, I guess I don't understand the very premise of the whole argument. That's what you do in a plea of guilty. You give up the right to your trial, and what Apprendi says is it simply that this is an element of offense that you're entitled to a trial on if you want a trial. But what's happening here is I don't want a trial, but I also don't want to admit. The bottom line is I want to try to slip by to a lesser offense. The lawyer, he studiously, critically said he wouldn't admit this particular, singled out this particular fact. That's no accident, right?
Right.
Of course. That's not. It's just playing the system.
I think the distinction between this case and Rojas Luna is very important because Rojas Luna only applies when you have a situation where the defendant has deportations both before and after the aggravated felony conviction. Because under 1326 section B2, the 20-year statutory maximum only applies if the deportation was after the aggravated felony conviction. In Rojas Luna, he actually admitted to a deportation that was before, and that's why the enhancement didn't apply. But here, all of the deportations were after the aggravated felony conviction.
But how do we know that? We know that only from the PSR, right?
That's correct, but there is...
I mean, he pled guilty to the 2-year statute, and you all want to enhance it to the 20-year, and that's the rub. That's the problem. To me, it almost seems like you didn't have a meeting of the minds on the plea, but that isn't before us.
I disagree with that. The indictment put him on notice that he was looking at the enhanced sentence because it did have a subsection B as a citation.
But what did he plead guilty to?
He pled guilty. He did admit that he had been deported, which is an element of both the simple reentry and also for the aggravated.
But he didn't plead guilty to, and it was after. I was deported after, right? I mean, that was what he stood silent on.
That's correct, but...
And y'all didn't prove that.
Let her answer, please.
This case is very similar to Martinez-Rodriguez, which I cited in my Rule 28J letter. And in that case, it was a 1326 trial. And there was evidence that the defendant had two deportations. The jury had to find that he had been deported to find him guilty of illegal reentry, even simple illegal reentry. But the jury never found which of the deportations applied. The Ninth Circuit said that it didn't matter because both deportations were after the aggravated felony conviction. And that's exactly the situation we have here. The defendant admitted a deportation. All the deportations that we have in the record are after the aggravated felony conviction. There is no dispute. He never disputed that there was any deportation before that.
Okay, but the evidence, I don't think you did answer my question respectfully. Did he plead guilty to something other than, I came in after being deported, I came in without permission of the Attorney General after being deported? Was there anything else he pled guilty to?
He pled guilty to illegal reentry under Martinez-Rodriguez, that because there was no admission to a deportation that was before the aggravated felony, and because there are no deportations that were before, that would be sufficient under Martinez-Rodriguez. That's the government's position.
All right, your position is if he just pleads guilty and he doesn't admit the sequence and he doesn't admit the timing, that's good enough.
If there are no deportations before. Because Rojas...
Yeah, but we only know that through the PSR. I mean, that's the problem that I'm having with the argument. It's sort of circular.
Well, and in Ramirez, which Ms. Odom had just mentioned, in that case, the court looked to the PSR to resolve whether he had admitted to a deportation that was before or after the aggravated felony conviction. So the court can look to the PSR in some circumstances. If the defendant had admitted that the PSR was correct under Ramirez, that would have been sufficient.
Yeah, but he didn't.
He didn't, but in answer to your question about looking to the PSR to determine the deportation.
Okay, let me ask you this. If, in fact, we were to find that this sequence or timing wasn't properly proven, what remedy would you think is appropriate? I mean, there's been asked some questions of your opponent as to whether there needs to be a jury trial on this or what happens. What remedy would you argue for?
I think the government would possibly could go back and try to establish that at the 20-year maximum.
Okay. And
why shouldn't we vacate the conviction?
Why don't you go back and give him the trial he wants and see what happens?
Vacate the conviction. If this is a sentencing fact, we'll vacate the conviction, let him start over, and he'll definitely be in for 70 months.
That's the silliness of all of this.
It would be one possibility. Yeah,
it's a system that allows you to play the game of the system. You want the plea and the benefits. You want to put those in your pocket, and let's put that to one side, and let's talk about the next one. Okay, let's go to trial. The plea bargain here, this plea, this appeal, if accepted, opens up him to far more time than he got.
That's
as
correct.
I read the record.
That's correct. And at rearrangement, when he was admonished of the 20-year maximum, he never said, or counsel never said, no, this is a simple illegal reentry and it's a maximum of 2 years.
Well, the flag was raised quite clearly when a defendant refuses in a plea of guilty, stands mute on a particular fact. Now that to me just jumps out quite clearly. And the question is, well, wait a minute, what is the crime to which this person is offering a plea? And then you're going to have to say it up or down, which it is. And so and if he said that, he can't have it both ways. He can't get the plea to this lesser offense and then come back when the government's the quick answer is give people a trial instead of turning this into a quasi-trial administrative process. Trials are much simpler.
Yes, I agree.
How would the government, how does the PSR know that he's been deported at those particular times? Where does the probation officer go for that information?
I don't know. In this particular case, typically that would come from ICE records. But I don't know exactly in this particular case if that were the case.
But, I mean, in other words, is that something that would be like a public record under the hearsay exception?
Yes. Yes, and it would be.
So calling it a, quote, fact is about like calling a prior conviction a fact, right? In other words, priors are not Apprendi facts, right?
That's correct.
And in any case, you can prove something up by a business record. So it's a matter of a business record of some sort that comes from somewhere if the government has to prove it in every case.
That's correct. Yeah. And
but the simple technique is to arraign the person on the crime, right? And then the PSR this information in the PSR is perfectly acceptable. The only reason that there's far more difficult information in PSRs that are routinely accepted and that is more difficult in the sense they're complicated and it would be difficult for the government to prove than this particular fact. The weakness here is in the arraignment itself, trying to arraign a person on, and if you tell him that he's pleading to Part B, then and of which this is an element, then the PSR is perfectly usable. Is that right?
I didn't understand the last part, that the PSR.
Then there's no there is no problem with Apprendi, because all the we routinely take facts from the PSR. And, I mean, he'll admit the fact judicially as a matter of.
For instance, the amount of the drugs.
Yes.
The amount of drugs is often admitted. It's often a fact in the PSR that the court uses to enhance a sentence.
That's correct. That's correct.
But not past the statutory maximum. I mean, you're not arguing that you can enhance beyond a statutory maximum without following Apprendi. I mean, that wasn't in your brief.
No, I'm
to me,
not
it
arguing.
Seemed like you guys agreed on the law. You were disagreeing on the facts here.
I agree that we disagree as to what the statutory maximum is. Their argument is that the statutory maximum is 2 years. Our argument is that the statutory maximum is 20 years because he did admit to a deportation, and all of his deportations were after the aggravated felony conviction. It is speculation to say that that he has a deportation that's before. In Rojas Luna and its progeny, there actually was an admission to a deportation that wouldn't qualify, and that's what makes this situation different.
Well, you ask for the problem when you want to separate these things out. You want to take a plea to part of what you really want. If you do that, then you're going to have to play with Apprendi. But if the government wants to prosecute this individual for the separate offense, it's separate because of the nature of it, with the quote enhancement, then it's going to have to arraign him on that.
Well,
you're going to arraign him on one part and then come back on the other.
And it's my understanding that the way it's done now in Judge Jack's court is that she's allowing the last deportation date to be admitted as part of the factual basis. So I don't think that possibly this will come up very often.
You can't fault the trial court for not adjusting to Rojas Luna within a week.
That's correct. But Rojas Luna really only comes into play when we have these multiple deportations, and some of them happen to be before. If this was a situation where he only had one deportation and it was after the aggravated felony conviction, there wouldn't be any Apprendi problem.
Well, actually, Judge Jack wanted him to appeal this, as I recall. She was very interested in hearing what the Fifth Circuit had to say about this because she felt it fell in a bit of a, and I guess this was pre-Rojas, I didn't appreciate that when I read the transcript, but it seemed like she was concerned about this falling into an area where there wasn't guidance for the trial courts, and she wanted that. It did not seem like anybody was hoodwinking her. She understood the deal, and she wanted to get some guidance from the court.
She did make a comment at sentence.
She said it several times. Let's see what the Fifth Circuit has to say. So I guess she'll get her wish.
If there are no other questions, we'd ask for that the court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Ms. Odom? Why isn't Rojas Luna confined to a situation where you have a deportation before the felony and one after?
The facts, it's true.
Because otherwise there would be no deportation to plead to.
It's true that the facts in Rojas Luna are different than the facts in this case. But Rojas Luna clearly stands for the proposition, and it's critical in its holding that the date of deportation and the sequence is an Apprendi fact. And it's something that the defendant must admit.
Well, Rojas I'm reading. I'm sorry.
That's okay. If you're looking at footnote 2, is that what you're...
No, I'm looking at the way Ramirez construes Rojas Luna.
Yes. Ramirez, again, keep in mind, is a plain error case. Ramirez says, even though there wasn't a deportation, Ramirez acknowledges, per Rojas Luna, that there has been a failure to prove an Apprendi fact. And Ramirez says, reliance on a PSR to establish sentencing facts that increases the penalty beyond a statutory max is clear and obvious error. Now, the court then does look to the PSR, but again, that is under the plain error analysis. That's not what happened in this case. This was an objection, and he did not admit to it. So there's a distinction, but Ramirez certainly recognizes that. And
let me ask you a question. How does your client come out? Let's talk about your client. How does your client benefit from this appeal?
How does my client benefit from this?
If you, quote, win this appeal.
The government proved at rearrangement that he was guilty of a 1326A conviction. There was sufficient evidence to prove that. And to address your concern.
That was a $12,000 forgery, right?
And I'm sorry?
That's a $12,000 forgery offense, right?
But he's
also got burglary of a habitation.
Yes, he did. But again, one of the things that we're mixing up here, and I want to be very clear about this, there is an Almendarez-Torres issue on an illegal reentry plea. I disagree that he was hiding behind, that the defendant was hiding behind the ball. It is very typical.
It's not a question of hiding behind it. It was very conspicuous what you were doing.
No, what we were doing was not admitting to an aggravated felony conviction. And that is typical. That goes on today because that is an Almendarez-Torres fact. Whether or not, I mean, we can certainly plead, and if they provide a date of deportation, and then we go to the sentencing factor of whether or not it qualifies as an aggravated felony, that's a different issue. And that's what he was not admitting. He was not admitting to an Almendarez-Torres fact. The factual basis that was provided by the government fell short. It only proved a 1326A. And with regards to Martinez-Rodriguez, the Ninth Circuit case, let's be very clear on this. It is true that the Ninth Circuit held the jury did not have to find the specific deportation dates. The reason they did not was because the specific dates had been proven beyond a reasonable doubt during trial. The dates, the documents that the government presented during trial included both of the deportation dates, and the Ninth Circuit held the jury necessarily found beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's prior removals were subsequent to an aggravated felony conviction.
It is just so shocking to me that we have an issue like this, and I know Rojas Luna can say what it says, but the fact is that we're just saying the son is not the son because there is no dispute about when this guy was deported. It is simply a technical fact that where you want to haul him out of prison, bring him back to court, they submit some ICE records, and he gets resentenced.
There is no reason to resentence him in this case. They proved a 1326A. He needs to go back and resentence to no more than 2 years. Under this court's precedent, under the drug cases.
But her point is that how you characterize this as a 2 year or a 20 year is dependent on whether he was deported before or after the felony offense. The only deportations that are in the record occurred after that offense, aggravated felony offense. And therefore, you're asking us to close our eyes to what is obviously the situation. And it's not just obvious as a matter of, it's in the documents and records of the United States government.
What I'm asking the court to do is on the facts of this case, when the government has failed at rearrangement to prove.
But he pled that he was deported. There's no question of the voluntariness of his plea to an offense that had a maximum of 20 years, right?
That's correct. He pled that he was deported, and he did, but he did not admit an Apprendi fact.
But you know, the very language you used to describe the change in culture with regard to these pleas, so the government proving at arraignment, the rules are that there must be a factual basis.
That's correct.
For the plea, and you simply ask the defendant if he agrees to that factual basis. There is no trial of proof there.
That's
and
correct.
And if the government wants to charge him with the offense with a higher range of penalty, they can do that, and they can be arraigned on that, and he can be told that, and the judge doesn't have to conduct any All of that would be going to trial. All you have to do is then say to him, ask him the question.
That's correct. That's exactly correct.
And if he doesn't want to admit to that, you have no plea.
But at the time that the plea was taken, that was the law, and that was okay, wasn't it? The only thing that makes this an inadequate sentence is the fact that the sentence occurred after Rojas Luna.
What makes it inadequate is that Rojas Luna acknowledged that the deportation date.
Well, there were a
and
lot
the sequence,
of things. Well,
right,
yeah.
And that's what makes it different. Is that case coming down?
We've had thousands of convictions before this court handed down Rojas Luna. So I can't even imagine the habeases that we might be faced with. Because everything was totally kosher, except for the advent of Rojas Luna.
Again, this court faced this in a drug case. It's an identification of an Apprendi fact that has been corrected. I think that we're looking at the equities and the fact in this case, the unique circumstances, with such a broad plea that was given.
Like a drug case, in my view, because in a drug case, you have the court relying on hearsay evidence about the amount of drugs that have been found. I mean, that's what it ought, and that's another thing that makes this so discontinuous with all of the other sentencing guidelines stuff that allows us to rely on all the rankest possible hearsay. I mean, this is, you're not going to say that the ICE records don't say what they say, so it's really not like drug offense cases.
It is in a sense that there's been an objection, and the PSR is a general sentencing document. I mean, the PSR.
This goes to characterization. And what I'm suggesting to you is that prior to Rojas Luna, this court most likely would have affirmed this sentence on an unpublished per curiam opinion because nobody had thought to argue at that point that Rojas Luna was the law. Now I see the point that you make, but at the same time, you have to prove that there's some kind of error that harmed your client, and it's not at all clear to me that there's error that harmed your client because everything is totally kosher.
Then if you're looking at, which this court does not do, this court has looked at, in an Apprendi-type violation, an error that's harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, if you're looking at that, even this court doesn't do that. They have occasionally on trial cases where they've looked at the evidence, but not on a case such as this. And even the Ninth Circuit, who does use that standard, they look at what was the information up to and including the factual basis for the plea, and they stop at that point. They do not go to the PSR. And I know my light is red.
Well, it's not your fault. Thank you very much.